I'm shocked that no mainstream media are currently covering this, because what I'm breaking down is massive news. Saudi Arabia has ditched the U.S. dollar. On Sunday, the 9th of June, Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, he refused to renew the 50-year petrodollar agreement between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Now, real quick, for those of you that may be, you know, scratching your heads, trying to figure out what that means, basically, the U.S. dollar was backed by gold until 1971, when Richard Nixon removed it from the gold standard. And then the dollar was sort of like in free fall. And then in 1974, a couple years later, when the U.S. made a deal with Saudi Arabia, creating what was known as the petrodollar. Now, the United States basically agreed to sell Saudi Arabia cheap military equipment and weapons, think, you know, protection, in exchange for Saudi agreeing to keep the oil trade denominated in dollars, meaning any country that wanted oil from Saudi Arabia had to invest in dollars. Then, as a result of that agreement, 80% of all global oil trade happened in dollars. And that basically cemented the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency, which the dollar's been since the end of World War II with the Bretton Woods Agreement signed in 1944. But now, Saudi Arabia just officially walked away from that agreement. So the ripple effects for the U.S. dollar are going to be massive, which is why in this video, I want to go over what exactly is going on. Why are the Saudis walking away from this deal now? And more importantly, where are they going? And then, of course, how is this going to affect our future and the potential consequences of it all? So let's get into it. Now, if you're new here, my name is Mark Moss, and I talk about a range of topics covering investing, macroeconomics, business, finance, Bitcoin, and more. But it's crucial that you stick around to the end of this video to understand everything we're about to break down, because these ripple effects could affect you no matter where you are in the world. Okay, so first, what just happened and what's going on? Well, the decision of Saudi Arabia just made not to extend the petrodollar agreement allows them to now sell oil and other goods in multiple currencies, including the Chinese RMB, euros, yen, yuan, and even Bitcoin if they want, which it sort of sounds like they may want to do. We'll come back to that. But there's basically more choice for Saudi, which is, of course, great news for them. But the issue is the problem for the U.S., and that is that the petrodollar agreement that's been going on for now decades has kept the dollar in the dominant position. And without it, we, speaking of those of us that use the dollar system, lose a great amount of global power. This agreement acts as a safety valve for our economy because it allowed us to release pressure by exporting dollars to other countries. Because after an oil trade, one party is sitting on too many dollars, surplus dollars. And then those dollars are then reinvested back into the U.S. dollar system, usually into U.S. treasuries or equities or even sometimes local infrastructure. When the excess dollars are reinvested, it's called petrodollar recycling. And petrodollar recycling is the primary way the U.S. is able to export its inflation. Now, petrodollar recycling allows the government to print money and keep those dollars outside the U.S. money supply. However, the resulting inflation, we feel, although very high, it actually only represents about 4% of the monetary expansion because those dollars have been exported to the other countries. Meaning, again, like I said, we've exported the inflation. But if those dollars come back, we could experience massive, even potentially triple-digit inflation in the U.S. Okay, so now that we understand that deal, then the question is, why? Why are the Saudis ending the deal now? And then what's this new system? Well, from the outside, it looks like they're simply stepping away from the agreement to be able to trade in any currency they want. More options, more choices. If you have a store, why not accept more currencies, I suppose? Which, you know, like I said, as a country seems pretty reasonable. However, in reality, there's a few things going on. The first one is it turns out that, like, in a partnership, they're supposed to work two ways, meaning, you know, both partners should be respectful of each other. But when President Biden came in, he basically came into office with threats and even name calling, which, of course, is, you know, not a good way to start a partnership or a relationship. When President Biden was on the campaign trail back in 2019, he vowed to make Saudi Arabia, quote, the pariah that they are. And even Biden initially shunned the crown prince, agreeing to speak only to his alien father, King Salman. Then he went on to rescind Trump's terror designation for the Houthis, despite the group having attacked Saudi oil infrastructure. And of course, now we've seen what the Houthis have done to the oil industry overall. Then, even worse, Biden attempted to revive the nuclear deal with Iran, which is Saudi Arabia's bitter enemy. And then on October 11th, 2022, President Biden gave an interview with Jake Tapper on CNN, basically talking about, you know, the sanctions, Russian President Vladimir Putin, China, Saudi Arabia, and so forth, the midterms, all of that. And in the interview, Biden threatened Saudi Arabia publicly with consequences. Well, let's just listen to it.
They're going to have to, there's going to be some consequences for what they've done with Russia.
What kind of consequences? Menendez says suspend all arms sales. Is that something you'd consider?
I'm not going to get into what I'd consider and what I have in mind, but there will be consequences.
Okay, so besides that, it's also a result of Saudi Arabia's commitment to the BRICS alliance. The BRICS, I've talked about them a lot, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and of course more nations now. But China and Russia have been reducing their reliance on the dollar, or what we call de-dollarizing, for over a decade now. And of course, Russia has been now completely kicked out of the entire global financial system. So how could all three of these powerful nations continue to trade? Well, they'd have to use another currency, one that's outside the dollar. So China and Saudi Arabia have been engaging in trade using the Chinese yuan, especially for trades involving oil and gas. Nigel Green, the CEO of one of the world's largest independent financial advisory and asset management companies, said, quote, "One of the most significant but underreported outcomes of April's three-day summit between Russia's Vladimir Putin and China's Xi Jinping was that Putin said Russia is now in favor of using the Chinese yuan for oil settlements," end quote. Ever since Western sanctions were put on Russia for its invasion of Ukraine early last year, Russia has increasingly depended on China to buy the oil other countries won't touch. This move away from the petrodollar suggests that the world's second largest economy and the world's largest energy exporter are actively intending to reduce dominance of the U.S. dollar as the bedrock of the international financial system. Now, if we look at the data, as you can see from the graph that I have on the screen, in the first 2 months of 2023 alone, China's imports of Russian goods surpassed their total purchases for all of 2022. With a staggering $9.3 billion flowing in, February even saw a record high of over 2 million barrels of Russian crude oil being imported by China. Now, this surge suggests the yuan is gaining traction as a major currency, and this points towards a larger shift in global power dynamics, potentially giving China more influence in shaping economic policies that impact everyone. And Russia, they've also been buying up tons of gold since the sanctions were imposed on them by the Western states, the NATO alliance. In 2023, Russia announced that its bullion holdings jumped by approximately 1 million ounces over the past 12 months. The bank reported having nearly 75 million ounces at the end of February 2023, up from about 74 million a year earlier. Now, while the US dollar remains the current king of reserve currencies, its reign isn't guaranteed. It's not absolute, at least not as it once was. Over the past two decades, the dollar share in global central bank holdings has shrunk from a dominant 72% in 2001 to just under 60% in 2023. Meanwhile, the yuan has been steadily climbing since 2016. Its share has more than doubled, reaching roughly 2.8% of global reserves by September of 2022. Now, I get it. Those numbers are small. It's a small number compared to a big number, but it's not about the absolute number. Obviously, that's important, but we also have to consider the rate of change and the direction, right? We're trying to see where we're going, not where we're at. And it's pretty clear what's happening. So then the question is, so what? What does this matter to me? And why should I even care? Well, as we've already discussed, less countries recycling trade surpluses into U.S. treasuries makes them buy less treasuries. And we can see how this has been happening over the last 10 years. Central banks around the world have become net sellers of U.S. treasuries and net buyers of gold. At this point today, there's no good reserve currency status. That's, you know, it's not like the other nations are going to start parking their money in Russian or Chinese bonds. But going back to gold is working well for them. And you can see the price of gold is moving in accordance of that. And if the Fed is forced to buy more of their own treasuries, that means more money printing. More money printing means more inflation, and it also means less global influence for the U.S. when it comes to trade and political issues. Now, does this mean it's game over for the U.S. dollar's global status? Well, not entirely. The U.S. could raise the Fed fund rate, right? And by doing that, they could attract more capital. The problem is, It also makes it way more expensive for the U.S. government to borrow money. And as we've seen in the interest payments on the U.S. debt, which have now exceeded $1 trillion, even exceeded the amount that the U.S. spends on its military, that's a problem. And that's only a problem for the government, but it's also extremely hard on the economy. Homeowners are struggling to buy homes. Businesses struggle to finance new projects, finance inventory. Consumers struggle to keep up with living expenses. Now, the other thing the U.S. could do, or really, I guess, could have done, or maybe should have done, is to be less demanding, less demeaning, right? Less coercive. It turns out, when you seize a global superpower like Russia's assets, and then you threaten nations like Saudi that, quote, there will be consequences, those other nations don't really like that, and then they start to maneuver to protect themselves from that. So while the U.S. could try to go back on that, you know, that hardline rhetoric, it's one of those things that you can't really take back. Okay, so that's the what and the why, and even what comes next. But what do you and I do about this? Well, first off, I'm not saying, let me be clear here, I'm not saying the U.S. dollar's demise and the end is imminent. I'm not saying it's coming anytime soon. As we've already discussed, the dominance is falling, and I think it continues to fall, but the dollar doesn't just disappear, at least not for decades, in my opinion. You have to understand history, right? So the U.S. dollar took over the global status from the pound sterling about 100 years ago. And yet, the pound, it's still the third largest currency today. And the U.K. doesn't even really like produce and export anything. So U.S. has a long way to go. And I think this is a process. It's not like an event that's going to happen. It's a process. And I think this goes out more of like with a whimper and not a bang. That means that we continue to just sort of head in the direction that we're going into, which is, you know, the same direction, more inflation, more money printing, but only at an accelerating rate. This means more deficit spending, more money printing, more inflation. It also means less global cooperation, which means more trade problems, which means more inflation, which is exactly why I've been an inflation bull. I continue to remain an inflation bull. I've been saying for a long time, I think this is still just getting started. Now, there's good news and there's bad news in this. Now, if you work for hourly wages and you don't own any assets, it's going to be bad, right? You're going to continue to fall further and further behind, and your quality of life is going to continue to go down. And I know that's bad. But for those of us who do own assets and even long-term debt like a home, we can expect inflation to continue to push those asset prices higher and higher, and inflation will continue to make our fixed rate debt cheaper and cheaper. Now for Bitcoin, of course, not all assets move at the same rate and speed. Now we know that Bitcoin has a 9% sensitivity ratio to global liquidity. So as more money is printed, more debt is financed, more inflation, Bitcoin should continue to outperform the rest of the market. But interesting developments are that Saudi specifically mentioned accepting Bitcoin as payments for oil. Now, I don't expect them to do that today, okay? So I already hear all the comments. I'm not expecting them to do that today. But again, it's the trend. It's the direction that we're going. We know that some of the oil-producing nations in the region are already starting to mine Bitcoin with their energy, and there are talks of Saudi Arabia joining into this. We also know that Bitcoin is legal there. We know there's lots of Bitcoin ATMs there. We know their sovereign wealth fund, the Saudi sovereign wealth fund, invests into Bitcoin and crypto projects. So there's lots of interesting developments there. And remember, again, it's the direction we want to be focused on. And as we continue to see a decline in the global power of the US dollar, I think the trend will be that we continue to see a rise of foreign countries investing into Bitcoin, sort of like what El Salvador has done. Why? Well, of course, instability of the dollars means people need somewhere else to park their money, something else to use as trade, something else they can trust. Now, I hope this has answered a lot of your questions. My honest opinion is, again, this isn't imminent. I'm not saying warning, like I have to go do something right now, but rather it's the confirmation that we're on the same trend, which means for our future plans of wealth building, we want to stay long. We also need to continue to watch for further developments. And for more on the BRICS alliance and the developments there, their currency reserve status, you might want to go watch this video I did about that here. Now, as always, give me some thumbs up if you like the video. If you don't, you can give me some thumbs down. That's okay. But at least tell me why in the comments down below. And of course, while you're at it, don't forget to subscribe. And that's what I got. To your success, I'm out.